Summer happens somewhere in between. And it happens in between the stale air of the end of a school year and the fresh air of the start of another one. It happens somewhere in between the planting of spring and the harvesting of fall. Summer happens somewhere in between this dream of going on vacation and the reality that vacation has gone by much too quickly. And now you got to pay for it somehow. Summer always happens in between. This is what we've been talking about. It's the in-between things that seem to take the most of the strength from our soul. And so this is what we've been talking about in our series, The Dog Days of Summer. It's based on a single verse of Scripture, Psalm 32, verse 4, that says, "For day and night your hand, O Lord, was heavy upon me. My strength was sapped as in the heat of summer." You see, it's this in-between moment. So we've talked about this. In between the forgiveness of God and freedom in God, we often experience the guilt. It's in between a lost connection and the recovery of that connection that we will experience grief. It's somewhere in between our plan and God's plan that we will often experience frustration. And today, it's somewhere in the in between us and God, that stands an enemy. And so what we're talking about today are enemies. Now the problem with an enemy is that enemies are hard to identify. No one ever comes up to you and says, "I'm going to be your enemy." No one has a sign around their neck that says, "I'm your enemy. We're fighting. We're not talking." Nobody wears anything on their head that says, "I'm Satan's helper." Now, some of you are thinking about putting that sign on their head for him. Don't do that. The problem with enemies is that we never recognize an enemy by their appearance. We only recognize an enemy by their behavior. This is why Jesus himself said in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 15, he says, "Watch out, beware for false prophets." Why? "Because they come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves." You see, no matter what a sheep looks like, a sheep will always behave like a sheep. And no matter how a wolf disguises itself, a wolf will always behave like a wolf. Translation, not everybody who appears to be our friend is our friend. In fact, most of our enemies rarely come out to oppose us like they're on this opposite side of us. Most of the time, enemies will come alongside us and they will appear to us like a friend. And so when we have enemies in our life and people start to mistreat us, and they start to behave like an enemy, most of the time, when they do so, we've been betrayed. Most of the time, our enemies are those who can be the closest to us. We're blindsided by it. We feel betrayed. We feel hurt. Enemies can be very painful. And so we have to be careful and ask the right questions when we're thinking about an enemy. It's not how they appear to us to be. It's how they behave. This doesn't mean that everybody who comes into our life is going to be an enemy, but it also means that not everybody who comes into our life is our friend. And so appearances can be deceiving because enemies only have one weapon: deception. How you know that, preacher? Because we only have one enemy. And the only weapon of the enemy is to deceive that which is true. He cannot create anything on his own. He always mocks or imitates or deceives that which God created, and he twists it for evil. And so enemies will always be deceiving. And so you understand the problem is that enemies often get into our life long before we ever see them coming. And they're at work in our life before we can defend ourselves. So what happens, I believe, is that when enemies get in, we don't recognize them. And because we can't recognize them, we can't have a plan of defense against them. So the first thing we have to do when we're talking about enemies is we have to recognize who the enemies are. I'm thankful for David. Because in Psalm 35, guess what he does for us? He defines who the enemies are. He defines the behavior of the enemies. And so if you look, an enemy will always seek to ruin our life. Verse 4 of this says, "May those who seek my life be disgraced and put to shame. May those who plot my ruin be turned back in dismay." An enemy does not exist for your good or mine. An enemy only exists for their own good and their own gain. So an enemy is something. It's not always just a someone. It's a something or a someone that does not exist to bring goodness into our lives. I first learned this principle when Sarah was in the hospital and Emerson was born. Here's what I learned. It took me a few hours. I always say this, is that I'm a little slow, but I will get there. And once I catch up, it's time to do something. Now, we had good doctors, we had good nurses, but it took me a few hours to realize that nobody in that hospital existed for the good of my wife and daughter more than me. Now, this is not speaking ill of the nurses or the techs, whatever all they do. Sometimes I think they're just doing stuff to keep them busy. Is that true? Anyway, and doctors. It doesn't mean they were enemies, but it meant that they did not exist for the good of my wife and child at the same level that I exist for them. And here's how I know. They would not be doing their job if they were not getting paid. True? Because you and I wouldn't be doing our jobs if we weren't getting paid. So they will exist for the good of my wife and daughter, or they will exist for your own good in so much as it brings good to their job and they can keep it and provide for their families. Do you see it? This isn't anything wrong. It's just to recognize that not everybody exists for good in the same way that you do, because here's the difference. I would lay down my life for the good of my wife and daughter. You would do the same for your family, would you not? You see, there's a different level of this goodness, and so we have to first recognize the goodness that wants to be brought into our life. Translation, I can tell you need help. God exists for your good. You see, our enemies exist for their good at our expense. But God exists for our good at His expense. Ooh, that's good. You missed it though. An enemy exists for their own good at our expense. God exists for our good at His expense. So God exists to bring goodness into our life. He wants every good thing to happen to you and to me, so that we don't just use Him for His goodness, but then we share that goodness with other people. You see how this thing works. But even when it cost God everything to bring His goodness to us, He paid the price. He gave His one only Son for us so that you and I could have all of His goodness. I'm going somewhere with this. You don't see it, I can tell, but just trust me. So the questions we have to ask when people come into our life, when we have decisions to make, does this person exist to bring the goodness God has prepared for me into my life? And when we come in relationship with people, the question we need to ask of ourselves, am I existing to help bring that same goodness that God has prepared for them into their life? I just solved all the world's problems and you missed it. What if we existed to help bring into the goodness of God into people's lives that He already has prepared for them? Do you see it? And so when we make a decision or a decision has been made that we don't agree with, because when you're in leadership, you always make decisions that people don't always agree with. And here's what you need to ask of leaders, or if you're a leader, ask of yourself. Am I making this decision to bring goodness to myself alone, or is this decision being made to bring the goodness of God into the lives of other people? You see, sometimes leaders make a decision that is actually for the good of everybody else, but they get all bent out of shape because they can't see it. But we have to ask sometimes, even if the decision might turn out to be a wrong one. But sometimes you have to look at the heart of a person. Is this person bringing God's goodness into my life or not? Will this decision bring God's goodness into my life or not? Let me help us. I want to drill down a little bit more. This is my longest point because the rest just talk about ways the enemy does this. You know, buying something new or cool isn't an enemy. Unless that enemy somehow, that new thing, will restrict us or keep us from God's goodness in our life. You know, not every TV show that we watch, we declare an enemy. But there are some TV shows that we might watch that might actually not be ushering in the goodness of God into our life. Are you with me on that? I'm not telling you what to watch and not to watch. I'm just telling you to use this filter for every decision, every person, every relationship, because here's what the enemy wants to do. The enemy wants to destroy our life. And the way the enemy does that is it exists to take everything good in our life away from us. An enemy will always seek to ruin our life. Now, how does an enemy do this? Well, thank you for asking. I'm just going to highlight a few verses. An enemy will attempt to limit us. Verse 7, since they hid their net for me without cause and without cause dug a pit for me. You know what that means? The enemy tries to trap us. You know the purpose of a trap? It's to limit or to prevent. Most of the time, an enemy will try and trap us because they want what we have. So they first start out coveting what we have. And if they can't have it, they don't want us to have it either. So if an enemy knows we're up for a promotion, guess what they're going to do? And if they want that promotion, they're going to seek to find a way to catch us in a trap, to limit us so that they can get what they want. Because an enemy will always exist for its own good, but never for the good of other people. So an enemy will attempt to limit us. An enemy lies about who we are. Verse 11, ruthless witnesses come forward. They question me on things I know nothing about. Translation, they lie. So here's the truth. If they cannot get what we have or what is coming to us, they can't take that from us. You know what the enemy will try and do? Enemies in our life, they will try and ruin our reputation. They want to destroy our character. They do this two ways. The first way is they will tell it to our face. They will always tell us what we need to be doing and not the good that we are currently doing. They will always talk about the negative and not the positive. They will speak discouragement and worthlessness into our life. They will always try to bring us down instead of lifting us up, because they want us to believe something about us that isn't true. Now, the other way that they will do this is through the reputation of other people. Oh, I skipped ahead. That's all right. An enemy treats us unjustly. I'll come back to that. They repay me evil for good and leave me like one bereaved, one who is grieving. Have you ever done good to somebody and they repay you with throwing you under the bus, doing something wrong? That's an enemy. You know why? Because when they treat us unjustly and unfairly, they're trying to get us to act out so that when we act out, it will ruin our reputation with other people. Man, that's good. I'll preach to myself as long as I need to. And they want us to stop doing good and to start returning evil for evil. But let me tell you something. This is later on in the sermon, so I'll give it to you now. If we return evil for evil, we will always only get what evil can do. But if we start to return evil with good, we will get what only goodness can do. That's good, but I got to keep moving. All right. An enemy celebrates failure, but when I stumbled, they gathered in glee. They failed and they threw a party. You ever know people who don't want you to succeed? They'll never celebrate anything good happening in your life. They will only celebrate when something bad happens. And what they do is this is not when they talk to you, this is when the enemies talk about you. You know a good test of any of our characters? Can we celebrate when goodness and blessing comes to someone else's life but not our own? You know one of the most exciting things about my job? It took me a while to learn this. I love to watch God bless and use other people. Sometimes because the people don't even see it. And you're like, God, look at God go! And they're just oblivious to it. And then finally they'll come to you, oh, I'm so thankful for what God's doing. And you're like, yeah, it started way back here though. Enemies don't do that. They will never celebrate your successes. They will only celebrate your failures. And probably what they will do is they always go back on your record to pull up dirt and they will always hang it over your head. But let me tell you something, just because it's in your past, it does not define who you are today. We all have things in our past, but remember when Jesus came and forgave our sin, it wasn't just that He kept it on the record and said, oh, that's been paid for. He wiped the record clean. You have no record because you do not stand in condemnation with Jesus Christ because His Spirit lives in you. Thank you. An enemy will challenge our faith. Like the ungodly, they maliciously mocked. They gnashed their teeth at me. You know what ungodly people are really seeking? They're seeking to know whether or not godliness and righteousness and faith makes any difference anyway. So if they can't get to what we have, if they can't get to our character, if they can't destroy our reputation with other people, if they can't do any of that, they will try and destroy the faith that we have in who God is. You ever heard things like, well, why would God let that happen to you? God's not a good God. What difference does going to church make anyway? You know what they want you to do? They want you to crack. They want the faith to be weakened. Because here's the thing. They're actually seeking to know whether or not faith in our life makes a difference or not. All right. I've tried to help give you what enemies look like. How enemies might behave. Now the question you might be facing is, how do we defeat the enemy? How do we defeat the enemy? Here it is. You're not going to like it. We defeat the enemy by facing the enemy, not fighting the enemy. We defeat the enemies by facing the enemy, not fighting the enemy. Let's pause. Translation. There is, in fact, only one enemy. There is only one enemy who tries to deceive us and trap us. There is only one enemy who will speak lies into our life about who we are, trying to discourage us. There is only one enemy who is trying to ruin our reputation. There is only one enemy who tempts us so that we lose faith in who God is and what He's doing in our life. There is only one enemy who is the accuser of the brethren, and his name is Satan. So that means, don't look at this one, okay? Your spouse is not your enemy. I should travel the world and save marriages. But boy, when you're in it, they can feel like the enemy. But they are not the enemy. Careful on this one. Your children, though you may think they are not the enemy. Your boss, your co-workers, your job, it is not the enemy. Culture is not our enemy. Terrorists are not our enemies. Immigrants are not our enemies. People of different race and ethnicity, they are not our enemies. And because the church is still forgetting this, and I'm thankful to be a part of a church that doesn't, so this is a gentle reminder, homosexuals, transgenders, heterosexuals. None of them are our enemies. There is, in fact, only one enemy. And he's already been defeated. Therefore, any enemies that are in our life, we have no reason to attempt to fight them. All we have to begin to do is to face them. This is going to be good. So David helps us in verse 1. He says, "Contend, Lord, with those who contend with me. Fight against those who fight against me." He brings two images. The first image, when he says contend, that means, "Lord, be my defense." But he's not talking about the battlefield. He's talking about the courtroom. Because what happens in the courtroom, if you are being brought charges against you, or even if you're the one bringing the charges, there is always someone who represents you. You do not do the fighting. You simply do the facing. The second image he gives is that of war. Fight against those who fight against me. Take up shield and armor, arise and come to my aid. Bring your spear and javelin against those who pursue me. Say, "I am your salvation." Translation, "I'm going to save you." Here's what God is asking us to do. We fight our enemies by facing our enemies. And we face our enemies by letting God be our defense lawyer. Can you imagine if we stopped going to the battlefield and we started going to the courtroom with our enemies? Because when we go to the battlefield with our enemies, you know what it will result in? It will result in violence. It will result in battles. It will result in someone being defeated. It will result with two people walking away from one another forever. Violence will only do what violence can do. But if we started facing our enemies in the courtroom of God, you know what the courtroom of God looks like. I'm just going to sit down. I'm tired anyway. God is sovereign and high and mighty, and He's seated on His throne. Satan's to the left. Sorry, left side today. And he's bringing accusations after accusations against us, and the blood's starting to boil, and we're getting our fist, and we want to stand up, and you want to fight, boy? And then we're like, "Hey, Jesus, you still there? Satan, you see that?" And all these accusations are brought, and we want to fight, we want to defend ourselves, and guess who gets up? Guess who our defense lawyer is? Jesus, the great interceder. And he gets up and he begins to present our case. And you know what Jesus does when he presents our case? He always presents what is right, what is true, and what is just. And then when God brings his ruling down, guess what God will do? He will always rule in the way of what is true. He will always rule in the way that is right. And he will always rule in the way that is just. That means that if you have been wronged by your enemy, it's not that you just forget about the wrong that's been committed, but you let God be God. He will defend you, and any wrong that's been committed, He will bring justice to that. He will make every wrong be made right. If someone's bringing lies about you, the best thing you and I can do is keep our mouth shut. Because God will bring the truth out of that which has been the lie. He does it every time. But we have to wait and we have to let Him fight for us. So the way we defeat our enemy is not by fighting our enemies, it's by facing our enemies. And by the way, this psalm was written by David. You know what that means? He wasn't talking out of one side of his mouth and living another way. David was anointed to be king very early in his life, but the problem was Saul was still king. And so if you read one chapter, Saul, the king, has a big problem on his hand. It's Goliath. And all of the fighting men of Israel won't fight the giant. And little pipsqueak David, he hadn't even hit puberty yet. He says, "I'll go fight." "You're just a little boy. What do you mean you'll go fight?" And David fights when no one else will fight for Saul. And he defeats the enemy for Saul that none of his other men could defeat. You read the very next chapter. You know what Saul is doing for David? He is trying to kill him. And on two occasions, you keep reading. One occasion, I love this. David's in a cave and Saul just brings, God brings Saul into the mouth of the cave and David sneaks up behind him with some scissors. Now, I don't know what kind of scissors they had back then, but they were scissors. Because it says he cut a snip out of his cloak. And then he snuck back out of the cave and got a big distance away. And he said, "Hey Saul, look at this." On two occasions, David could have fought his enemy. And guess what? David would have defeated Saul. He was the Lord's anointed. But I want to tell you something. The purpose of facing our enemies instead of fighting our enemies is so that our enemies can know the love of God. That's it. You know what Psalm says? David writes in Psalm 23, he says, "You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies." You know what that means? You sit down at a table and we face the enemy and we don't fight the enemy. Because if God's the one preparing the table, we may be in the presence of enemies, but we're also in the presence of an Almighty God. You see, if there's enemies in your life, it's because you're a threat. You go very long without enemies in your life, it might be because you're not a threat no more. It might be because I'm not a threat anymore. It might be because the enemy has been given a foothold and taken hold of our life more than we wanted. But I marvel at Jesus. Because on the night Jesus was going to be betrayed, He sat down at a table. This table, which would represent His cross. And He sat down at a table with, guess who? His enemy. And He offered to him the bread, which represents His body, the cup, which represents His shed blood. It was almost an offer of salvation to Judas. You don't have to do what you're getting ready to do. Is that even His enemy, Jesus gave an invitation of salvation for. The way that we fight our enemies is by facing them. So that in our dealing with our enemies will know and experience and feel the love of God. For it is only the love of God that can compel us to face our enemies instead of fight them. To sit down at the table with them and to let God do what only God can do. I'm going to ask if you are prepared to wait on us today to help serve communion. I'm going to ask that you would come. We're going to sing a song today. The elements are going to be passed. I'd ask that you would take the bread and the cup, receive them when you are ready. As always, you do not have to be a member of our church to receive the bread and the cup. We just ask that you know Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. But as you receive them and are seated, I want you to envision being seated at the table, perhaps with some people that you might call your enemies. And to realize that the love of God that has come for you and me is also the love of God that comes for them. I want to read from you from 1 Corinthians or from Colossians chapter 1 as the elements are being passed, and then we'll sing. Next slide, please. Once you were alienated from God and were, everybody say it, enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior. But now He has reconciled you to Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in His sight, without blemish and free from accusation. If you continue in your faith, established and firm, do not move from the hope held out in the gospel. What you hold in your hands is the hope of the gospel. And as we sit down with our enemies, we extend to them the hope that's been extended to us. Because we know there's only one enemy, and he's already been defeated.